Hello and welcome to another episode of Brains Behind AI. Today I have with me Mark Stevens. He is the president and CEO of Boon AI. It's a no-code machine learning integration platform for media-driven organizations, and we're going to learn all about it on this episode. Prior to Boon AI, Mark led the media and entertainment divisions at organizations including Autodesk, Avid, and Microsoft. Mark, excited to have you on the show, and welcome.
Harry, it's great to be here. I appreciate you having me on. Looking forward to the conversation.
Great. Mark, before we dive into the company and Boon AI and what you are building, we want to learn just a bit about you and see how your personal journey led you to building Boon AI and where you are.
Sure. It's a bit of an indirect path. You know, maybe full disclosure, I was not one of the original founders of the company. I came in probably several years after the company had been up and running. My personal history was I had 20 plus years. So I'll talk about those parallel paths and then maybe how they reconnected together at some point. You know, I think in terms of Boon AI and the company, it started out founded as Zerella. It was, you know, a set of media technologists, a bunch of people that, you know, I would say came out of the film visual effects space, working on some of the largest, most complex media projects, you know, Lord of the Ring films, Avengers movies. And, you know, I think if you kind of roll the clock back to when the company was founded, there was a lot of innovation in the AI machine learning and computer vision space at that time. You know, so I think that there's a bunch of ideas around how do we leverage all this AI ML technology to start to transform digital media management, right? So that's where they started out in their journey started. My journey started, you know, I was in the media space, computer graphics, you know, kind of a tech, you know, technology heavy, but then got more business focused as a tech executive in, you know, I would say media content creation tools, selling to a lot of those same customers. And a lot of what I focused on, I realized kind of when I stepped back over my career, a lot of what we did is try to democratize technology. And when I say that, you know, it's like, how do we get what our very complex, you know, tools and things that only, you know, only a you know, highly trained programmer can actually get on a screen, and take that and get it into a set of tools and a form factor and a price point that we can grow the market and get it out to lots of people, right? And I think that that's what, like, over my career, that's what I did a lot in the 3D animation and graphics space. You know, we kind of took that technology that was in the lab or built by the movie companies who did something very specific for one movie. And then they, you know, then we took it and found a way to generalize it and make it available to, you know, to an artist who may not even have a programming background to be able to make those same amazing pictures. And you kind of look at, you know, when I started, you know, there was a one or two shots in a visual effects movie, and now you have hundreds of shots and the whole thing is a visual. And part of that is just because you're able to democratize the technology. So let me wrap this back up and kind of talk about where the paths collided. I think, so at the time it was Zerella before it was Boon AI. They were, you know, what they were finding is, you know, so yes, there was interest in need and how you can kind of leverage all this computer vision, machine learning, gain insights into all your media. You know, how do we monetize all that? But I think that what was happening is that they found that, you know, there was every customer engagement was almost like a custom development effort, you know, so it was almost like a, you know, I don't want to say it was a consult. It wasn't meant to be a consulting service. I think the goal was to be a product. But what you found with every separate customer, they almost, you were doing something different and you were building, and maybe you had some tools that you could leverage that you were saying, but like it's not scalable. So I think, you know, we kind of connected, looked at that whole story. And, you know, what I came in to look at doing is saying, hey, is there a way to start to look at how can we start to put this in, you know, look at it in a little bit different way? Is there a way we can start to put things in a form factor, make it more accessible, make the price more accessible, and get this out to more people? And that's really what started, you know, when I came on board, that was kind of the genesis of Boon AI. And over the last, I would say, year and a half, that's what we've been doing. And we launched that platform several weeks ago now. So,
yeah, congratulations on that. I saw the press release. So did they find you or did you find the founders, the original entrepreneurs who started it?
Actually there's a couple of things that happened. I actually, when I had, after 20 plus years with similar technologies and teams, and I, in some ways, the original tech I started with 20 years earlier, it transformed, it got bought and sold into different companies, but I sold it and I grew it, and that kind of played out over the course of that time. I decided it was time to go, do some different things. I went out, I did some consulting for a bit. And I think through common contacts that, we had in the media industry, I ended up doing some consulting for Zoroa at the time, what has transformed into Boone AI. And that's how the relationship started. They were seed funded by Gradient Ventures, who are Google's, I would say, seed AI ML investor, met with them and talked about some of my ideas on how, we could, and it looked how we transform, the technology and the business from, being, more custom development focused into something that we could have more broader market appeal and scale in terms of just getting the technology out to more people and having a scalable business around it.
Got it. So you joined the company and it seems like you have been hands-on. The team has been in terms of getting the product ready to the launch, which you just recently had. So can you sort of talk to us what those last couple of years has been in terms of building out the product, and what are some of the things and considerations that has gone into it?
Sure. Yeah, so I think, on there's pros and cons to history. I think anyone who will, has inherited some parts of technology or customers of the past, I think that you want to. So I think the good thing on the good side is that there was a lot of knowledge in the team. Just in terms of going through some learnings one or two times about, how they did this and how they'd like to do it differently and what was working and what wasn't. But then you also have some of the legacy of, you have existing customers that have, installations and setups, and you want to be careful, right? Like, your reputation is important, to say, hey, we're not doing that anymore. We're doing something else, So I think it's it's a bit of a trade-off, and you also have some of your revenue stream coming in from those customers too. So, you're a startup. You can't just say, hey, we don't need you anymore. We got this better idea, depending upon how well-funded you are. But, I was in the situation where we were trying to, manage, and I don't even want to say soft land. I mean, we had a transition plan for those customers, but that was going to take some time while we're saying, like, okay, we know we don't want this to be every customer is a special case, right? How do we step back and say, what does the market need? What are some of the things we've learned that are in common across all the customers that we can start to generalize and, make applicable? Because, I think the team itself that came out of the industry, saw a set of problems they were trying to resolve. I think when you looked at some of the customers that we were supporting, they also had some commonality across them in terms of the problems they were trying to solve. So I think it was just popping it up a level and, trying to look at it at a little bit higher level and see where those, those pain points that were shared across a broader audience, and I think, the other thing that happens too is over time, technologies that you build on evolve, right? Like, I think, the cloud service providers, the larger ones are making massive investments, obviously in their infrastructure, which makes things easier for us to do, but also in their AI ML libraries. Right. So there's a lot more off the shelf to build on. So, this isn't as much of a, hey, let's start from scratch every time. Right. How do we leverage the good stuff that all these companies are doing and try to broker that? And, not that that's not going to be, you know, I don't think even today we're very far from saying, well, if you take all the off-the-shelf stuff, you have answers to everything. Not at all. But I think you can avoid doing a lot of work, you know, if you do that.
Yeah, speaking of that, right, let's jump to the product, Boon AI. Yeah, it's, you have described it on your site. You call it the no-code machine learning integration platform for media-driven companies. Well, what does that mean? And sure. I know you started touching on what your vision and idea is there. So if you can just elaborate a bit in layman terms what your product is and what it does for companies.
It solves a couple of different problems. You know, I think that if you look at, you know, a lot of people in my team, what they told me is that, you know, they were in charge of, you know, these production technology teams. Someone would come to them and say, hey, I want to use machine learning and AI in our pipeline to do these things. Can you set that up for me? And, you know, you have a week and you got to do it with your existing team. And no, I don't have any more money for you. Right. So I think that, you know, they stepped back and said, wow, like it's kind of crazy, you know, because what we saw is that, you know, a lot of times the, you know, the risk is high, you know, when you're doing these machine learning projects, risk is reasonably high. Results are not necessarily known at the start. Are you going to get the results that you want? And, you know, you needed, you know, there's a few pieces. There's the data science behind, you know, creating a model that actually works for you, but then actually deploying that model and scaling it in production is another whole set of technologies, right? So I think what we tried to do is, you know, package up some of those infrastructure things by, you know, leveraging cloud technologies and starting to leverage, you know, and then for the data science model, starting to leverage the off-the-shelf tools from Microsoft and Amazon and Google. And, you know, then also, you know, add some tools to do customization, but at a higher level, you know, with a nice visual interface that kind of abstracts having to set up the whole infrastructure to even run one model on one image, which is, you know, time consuming in itself. But like you kind of now you give people the ability to run, you know, hundreds of models, you know, once you look at what the cloud providers have, and then you look at, you know, the open source libraries and PyTorch and TensorFlow, you know, what we've tried to do is package those things up. So now within an hour, you know, you're basically just pointing to a bucket of images or videos. And then depending upon the problem you're trying to solve and the models that you may need, you can kind of go in and select the models you want to run. And then there's a nice visual interface to be able to understand and experiment with the results, which is another, you know, thing in the media space, which is important, right? Like when you, you know, people in the media space are used to looking at visuals and pictures and working, you know, that's their frame of reference. You know, it's not a spreadsheet of numbers and big JSON files with lots of, you know, lots of text in them, right? It's not their strong suit. So I think that what we tried to do is, you know, give people results that they could start to understand and experiment with different options off the shelf, you know, bring in custom models they created and then, you know, be able to do some A/B testing. And then eventually, you know, because the other thing too, like, you know, machine learning and in some respects, it's still reasonably expensive to run at scale. You know, it's different, you know, I want to experiment with, you know, with a gigabyte of files versus I have several petabytes of data that I want to process and run through this information through, right? The cost profile is very different. So you'd like to be able to experiment and try things out. And then, you know, once you know what works for you and your use case, then, you know, you can kind of lock that in and the platform is, you know, built in a way that it is scalable and can handle, you know, through our Kubernetes cloud infrastructure can scale up and handle those large payloads.
Yeah, that makes sense. So can you give us an example of what is a use case, a common use case that machine learning is addressing for media companies? I understand you're that integration platform, but yeah, it would really help the audience if they can understand, yeah, if you can break down a use case.
Sure. So I can talk about a few different things in different types of companies that we work with. Like you said, you know, we tend to be that bridge for the companies to be able to get all that enriched dynamic data. And then where do they use it, right? Like I think that, you know, there's some companies like, so just automatically tagging information in an image, you know, so they know which images had a certain logo show up in them, right? Which images had a certain person that may have shown. So you know, I think that a lot of the companies, the way that they have solved these problems in the past is that they have people go out, you know, someone says, hey, you know, find me all the shots with Robert Downey Jr. in a Lamborghini in New York City, because someone wants to do a marketing piece, right? Like, and they'd have someone run around and looking at all the B-roll. And, you know, so now if all your footage is tagged, you know, someone can sit in an interface and say, you know, Robert Downey Jr., Lamborghini, New York City, boom, you know, you get everything popped up to the frame. And then it doesn't just say, hey, it's in this 2-hour video, go find it. It's going to tell you exactly at the time code. So that's one example, like usage rights management. Like people want to know, you know, if they're like, are the properties they're using, are they, you know, are they putting something up they're not licensed to show? You know, they could check things like that, right? You have content moderation. Right. I, you know, am I showing any sensitive content, language, you know, violence, those types of things. So all these machine learning models that are getting, you know, better and better every day, you know, continue to grow. So you can do more and more with these things. I can go on and on, like, yeah, visual similarity search. Right. Like, so a, you know, example, a retail company, you know, wants to say, hey, show me all the things that look like this shirt. Right. Oh, that aren't exactly like it, but, you know, that are visually similar. Right. So those are some of the things that, you know, people can start to do.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And if I can put it in simple words, it's like, instead of having humans watch the video and manually tag what's happening in its scene or shot, you have a machine learning model that's watching the video for you and tagging it and making it searchable.
Right. Right. That's right.
That's very valuable. Super valuable. So now we understand what the product is. What are your typical customers? What does the target market looks like for you? And given you just launched, you have a beachhead you're starting out with.
Yep. So I think, you know, just based on, so we decided to, so a lot of us, just based on our histories, have a lot of connections in the media space. So, you know, some of our targets are production companies who are doing, you know, who are doing full-length features, who are doing commercials, who are doing, you know, different things like that. So those are some of the companies. You know, we have people that are doing in the virtual goods space, right? So they're building catalogs for people of all their goods online, and they want to tag all those things and, you know, make them searchable and accessible. So, you know, those are different type of customers we're working with. Sports teams, you know, I think that they're, you know, a lot of these sports teams are looking at how to monetize their assets in different ways, you know, making, you know, they go back and they want to find footage with certain things in their archives because they're putting on a, you know, a 20-year special on a certain player, or, you know, things like that they're doing. So, you know, so those are some of the types of people that we've been engaged with so far.
Yeah. No, that was one of the use cases I thought about, sports team, and because I know how much attention goes into watching the videos of your game as an athlete to see how you did and how the other party's team is doing and how you compete with them in the next game. So that's very, very interesting. And there's so much tape. You'll go back even 20 years, right? There's a lot to someone can learn from just once they know what tags to search for and quickly curate those snapshots.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. Now, in terms of the software, is it sort of software as a service where you go online, you upload the video and everything gets tagged. How does that work, right? If I'm a customer, I want to get on, what do I do?
Yeah. So it really is as simple as that. You know, you sign up, you create an account, and then we have a user interface that walks you through a process. You know, it's kind of 1, 2, 3, point us to the source content that you want to analyze. Okay, here's, you know, depending upon what you're interested in, here's your different choices of the different AI machine learning models we could run for you. And then, you know, a nice visual display, somewhat of like you'd see on an editorial timeline if you're doing video, of the results, where you can, you know, start to search and filter and, you know, start to understand the results you're getting, start to do some A/B testing against different models from different vendors, or, hey, I'm not getting the results I want. If I create one on my own, am I getting better results than what comes off the shelf? Things like that. So yeah, that's, you know, like we said, we've targeted under an hour, at least, you know, to get, you know, start to get results and start to experiment again. You know, a lot of the AI, you know, machine learning process is, you know, it is iterative. You know, you do learn things, you do have to refine and adjust, but you know, I think what we want to do was remove all the heavy lifting of setting up the infrastructure to do that, you know, and then let people focus on the results and what they need to do with the results to enhance their business, and not all the nuts and bolts that go into getting it up and running in the first place.
Well, I'll ask a technical question just for my own sake. So when you say, when I point you to the library or directory where I have all the videos, in our case, say the podcast videos we have, are you bringing those videos on your platform, on your cloud, or are you just bringing the tagging? Where does the content sits?
So what we try to do, you know, what we've tried to do in our service is we actually are taking, you know, what we'll do is we will upload the file, we will create a proxy of it, because if you look, most of the machine learning models, they don't work on full resolution content, right? They just don't. So we create a small proxy, we throw away the original, we don't need to keep it, and then we do the processing within our cloud. You know, we generate those results that stay in our case, it's an Elasticsearch database. And then, you know, we have, you know, so basically the way the platform, you know, the platform is the API and the SDK, because any interface that we've built that we make accessible to the end user was built off our SDKs. So basically, you know, at that point, if you want to integrate those results into a media asset management system, or if you have some of your own internal applications that you want to connect this to, you know, there's a whole set of documentation and examples and source examples of, you know, ways and how to do that. So, and we're starting to build out more of a library of what I would say pre-built plugins to some of the more, you know, more widely used content management systems. So really people just can plug in and go. They wouldn't even have to do any integration there.
That's awesome. What is your business model? Is it a monthly subscription? Is it based on the content? How do you charge?
Yep. Yeah, so what we tried to do, again, you know, this, you know, our goal here was about trying to get the accessibility down and the price down. So we have, you know, we have a flat fee subscription to be able to use the platform that you can, you know, you can bring your content in, and then the variable portion is the AI ML usage. So, you know, so there's a, you know, there's a per hour. What we tried to do is, you know, start to try to generalize a bit the cost. So because each vendor, each API, you know, slightly different cost model. So again, it's another layer of complexity that people try to have to figure out. We want to try to simplify all that and say, okay, you pay us, you know, to keep your data on the platform, to be able to search it and keep it accessible. You're paying us a monthly subscription fee to have access. And then, you know, you're also paying a per hour cost for, you know, let's say it's video. It's per hour cost per video, per, you know, it's also per, you know, X number of images, if it's images. And then you pay for the ML, the machine learning that you run on those. So that's, you know, that's how we break it up. So that way, you know, if someone's not running a lot of AI ML, they're going to have a lower cost of entry than if someone is running a significant amount.
Yeah, almost like a utility bill there. That's great. Now, switching to challenges, right? It's what you have built, it's not an easy product to build. There's so much that goes into it that I can think of. What are some of the challenges you encountered in terms of getting your product to market? And how did you tackle them?
That's a great question. You know, I think that, you know, one of the biggest challenges that we have been, you know, I think one of the biggest things you try to figure out as a startup is where is your identity as a company? And, you know, I think in some ways your customers can pull you in different directions. You know, are you going to be a tool for developers that is in their toolbox and that they use to help get their job done? Are you going to provide an end user solution that does everything for people? They say, hey, I don't want to know anything about this. I just want to know it works. Are you going to fall somewhere in the middle and be that kind of connection between the two that gives people, you know, because I think where we landed, you know, I think the company has gone back and forth a bit, you know, and from a pure technology point of view, you know, I can't say there was one problem we got stuck on, but I think from a product market fit point of view, I think that that's been one of the hardest challenges for us is, you know, finding out like what's our true identity. And, you know, we're starting to land on it. And it's been, you go out there, you talk to customers, they start to experiment with your stuff. You get feedback. I think, you know, what I've learned is everyone likes to be polite and say your stuff's great, you know, so that you got to filter through that and make sure you're asking the right questions and getting to, you know, what would you need to be able to start to use this now, right? Like what makes it a must have for you versus something that is just, wow, that's really cool. I'd like to use that someday, right? And I think that there's that, especially because we're a bit technology infrastructure, you know, there's that balance between, you know, the engineering team doesn't necessarily have the business problem to justify the budget all the time. So you got to kind of, you know, you got to kind of balance like being really clear about what problems you can help solve and how do you help solve them? Because, you know, someone somewhere has to say, if I'm going to use this tool, how am I making more money or how am I saving costs or, right? Someone's going to ask you those hard questions, right? And I think those are some of the things that we've had to work through over the past couple of years.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. I'm going to double click on one of them, the startup identity challenge you brought up, right? And that's the reason I bring up is because a lot of startups go through that where they will, there's this fine balance between who you want to be and where you can make money in short term, right? You talked about, hey, maybe tools is a quick way to make some money while we build out the platform. And sometimes they run into that, but then they get locked into everyone's point of view is they're a tool company, right? And not a platform. So moving from that identity to another becomes a little bit harder. Just like how movie stars get stereotyped into roles once they play that role, right? And they get good at it. I want to understand, or actually maybe what is your advice to the entrepreneurs that are building something and also at the same time in their early stages trying to figure out how they define who they are?
I think there's a couple things that I would say. You know, I think focus is incredibly important. I think it's always, you know, And this is it's hard to define because there's never one right answer. But I think that, I would say focus is important. Having a vision that, of where you want to get to is important at the end. I think that the road you take there, you should have some flexibility on. If you're too rigid on that, I think that, just the amount of constraints you put on the problem may doom you to failure in some way, shape, or form, either because you don't have the money to get that far or, the customers just aren't ready for it. Sometimes the customers aren't ready for it. You say, this is a great idea. This is going to help everyone, and nobody's doing it yet. But then the customers just aren't there yet, in their business models and their technology adoption curves and things like that. So in some ways, at the end of the day, where you may need to change the end goal as you go through this journey. But I do think a lot of the times it's just that, have some flexibility on how you get there. Because if I look at this company's experience, some of the initial, I would say, fundamentals about what they saw the company should be, it's not like they've drastically changed, but I do think the road that we are taking to get there has definitely took some twists and turns. And I would say be open to that, have that flexibility. You may need to make some trade-offs in the short term for the greater good of the long-term success of the idea, the company, all those things.
That's an excellent advice. You made a couple of points that resonate with me. One, you said, know your focus and stay focused on that. Have a vision, but be flexible in terms of the road and the path you take to get to that vision, because the ideas evolve and the technology may evolve and even the thinking may evolve as you build the product out. So it definitely resonates with me. Okay, great. Now, I'm moving more towards the industry that can leverage your applications. And one of the things I've seen in the industry in general, actually, regardless of the industry we talk to, there's always this hesitation from moving from the way we do things into an AI-driven approach. And what I've seen a lot of startups run into is they see it as a, hey, cool, fancy tool. We can play with it on a side. It's really hard to get traction with them, mm-hmm. if I can put it like that. In your experience, do you have any advice for entrepreneurs that are building something and taking it to the industry? How can they get traction and how can they get through some of the biases that exist, given that it's cutting edge and it's a bit of a buzzword and all that?
Yeah, it's a great point because even before I came to Boone AI, in my previous life building content creation tools for 3D animation people, anytime you talked about AI, it was like, you're going to do stuff and not even need an artist, right, to be able to do anything. And they're saying, hey, wait a minute, right? Like, you'll never be able to, create a masterpiece without the artist. And I think, so the way I look at this is I would actually say, I think we use the word, when we talk about AI and ML, we're going to automate things. And I think the better term to use is augment, because, like I think that, so like in the creative space, instead of saying, hey, all the AI and ML is going to have all the is going to do everything for you. It's like, how do you have a creative assistant, right? Like, how do you have someone that may be able to give you more options or think about different ideas faster, things like that. I think we have to approach it that I think there's a couple of things. One, there is a statistic that we looked at when talking about all this stuff, and there was a Forbes article about how 87% of AIML projects never make it into production. So I think some people have been, somewhat snake bitten by AIML, all the promise, and they tried all this stuff and they spent a lot of money and they didn't get anything in the end. Mm-hmm. And now they're a little bit concerned to go back. I think you have the other dynamic about there's certain people that are You know, maybe they think, oh, well, you know, automation, I'll lose my job. And, you know, what will I do if, you know, if this just is able to do everything for me, right? So I think you got to back off a little bit of that in your approach and think about, like, how are they going to be able to spend time? You know, how are your tools and your technologies going to allow them to spend time on the real value add and differentiators of your business? Like I say, on you know, with our product, you know, what we talk about sometimes is like all the infrastructure and plumbing to set up to run an AI ML model at scale and look at the results and stuff. That's not, you know, if you're a production company or a retail company, like, that's not your core competency. That's not driving your ROI. So if someone else has figured that out and they can automate that, you know, they can take some of that off your plate, you know, or you start to provide tools and capabilities that just, you know, let the users do, let them do more of what they do in the creative, you know, we're in the media space. So this is like, we think a lot about the creative pieces of their work. Let them focus on the creative stuff, the things that, you know, the machines aren't going to be as well at, and how can we assist them in those things? You know, that's some of the ways that I like to look at it. I think we got to, you know, part of our goal too, and what we were doing is try to bring the cost down, the fear of experimenting down. So it's not a big investment in risk and cost and time and people and all these things. And, you know, people can kind of on the side continue to experiment, see where it helps their business. You know, some things will work out, some things won't. And, you know, make it less an all or nothing type of proposition.
I like what you said. It's the augmentation versus saying, hey, it's the artificial intelligence that's going to replace you, replace what you do. And also taking the barriers down for them and making it easier for them to experiment would definitely help get the traction. Great, great advice there. Last question for you is, where do you see, what's the next milestone for Boon AI? What are you working towards next?
I think for us, you know, goes back to what I said in at the start, right? Like, I kind of looked at, you know, I look at it this way. If you look at, you know, this is somewhat of a, I'm going to do an analogy, you know, there's, you know, when you're looking at like people working with on data problems and things, you know, for people where you need C++ programmers, you know, there's only so many, you know, there's what, five, like if you look at some of the data, you know, like 5 million C++ program competence in C++. If you look at scripters with Python and everything, you get into the 10 million number realm. And if you look at people who are able to use something like a spreadsheet, you're talking about a billion, right? Like, it's a big number, right? So I don't think the next step for Boon AI is going to be to jump to a billion, but I think if we want AI and ML to become more mainstream, the tools have to continue to get easier. You know, they're going to have to democratize. They're going to have to come down in price. They're going to have to be more accessible to people who don't necessarily have hardcore programming, scripting, data science backgrounds, if we want to kind of get these out to a broader market. So that's what I'm looking at in terms of success for us in our next step. Can we branch out beyond those types of people who have a lot of expertise in AI, machine learning, and programming, and all those things? That will really be success for us if we can get to those people.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's a good goal. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for taking the time to be with us. This was super informational. Really appreciate it. So, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, Ari, it was great catching up with you. Enjoyed the conversation, and I look forward to talking again soon.
Great. Thank you.